Welcome to season two.
We've rebranded. We're ready for season two. We've got some fantastic guests coming on and we're ready to open up our audience.
Please always remember to like, follow and subscribe. It means the world to us. Today we have Bianca on the show. She's the founder and CEO of Sebby's Corner. She's also self-diagnosed ADHD. Enjoy the show.
Thank you so much to PCB Partners for sponsoring us. They are a global boutique M&A firm for the digital first economy, providing buy side and sell side services with a focus on disruptive technologies, digital transformation, management consulting and creative marketing services businesses.
Welcome. Hi, Bianca, aka my cousin. Lovely to have you on the show. So, Sebby's Corner, the founder and the CEO. Also, self-diagnosed ADHD. Talk to us.
Hi, thanks for having me. So, I founded Sebby's Corner coming up to 5 years ago now.
Oh my gosh.
Pretty much by accident. I was just trying to get rid of my kids' clothes during lockdown. And then what was a little hyper-focus became a very successful charity. I am self-diagnosed ADHD. That's kind of been a realization for probably say maybe like 2 years, and actually has been a total game changer for me in just every aspect of my life, how I live my life, my relationships.
Yeah, it makes you understand more about
completely.
You.
Completely. And I'm like, how did I get to like the ripe old age of, you know, 36, whenever I was when I figured it out, without realizing this?
Yeah.
And now everything feels much easier now that I know that that's who I am, and that's why I have certain behaviors and why things are harder for me than they are for other people.
But your skill is your hyper focus.
Yes.
And this is where you are today with your most amazing charity. So you have to, it's positives.
Absolutely. And I always say to my husband, who is one of my biggest supporters and puts up with all sorts of hyper focuses, that if it wasn't for my ADHD and the hyper focus that was Sebby's Corner, there would be no Sebby's Corner. Mm-hmm. When it very first started, I remember phoning him. He loves this story, and saying, I've had this idea and I've got like Darcy's clothes, she's outgrown and there's nowhere to give them, and isn't it such a shame, and I should do something, and maybe I'll like be the place where people can come and get clothes they've outgrown. He was like, B, that sounds really lovely, it's a great idea, when I'm home from work, I'm about to go into a meeting, let's talk about it and let's just try and make it work. And I was like, okay, cool, great. By the time he got home from work, my living room was full of clothes from every single person that I knew.
Wow.
And he was like, sorry, I thought we were talking about this when I got home. But I just was so excited. And that is also another thing, the impulse control I sometimes lack. And
it sounds so like me in that sense. I'm the same.
I'm too lazy. I wouldn't have done that.
My whole house would have been filled like yours.
Yeah,
believe me.
I was just so excited. I was like, we have to do this. It's a great idea.
I want people to know the background of Sebby's Corner.
Yes.
And why the name Sebby.
I'm aware of it. And why the name of Sebby and how you came about that.
Yes.
Because I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. So that day I was trying to get rid of my kids' clothes. And obviously we were in COVID. We were at the height of COVID, height of lockdown. All the charity shops were shut. And I just thought, God, this is such a shame. Like, there are so many food banks around. And if you can't afford to go to the shops and buy food for your children, how on earth can you afford to go to Next or, you know, Tesco even and buy clothes? You just can't. So I thought, well, this is obviously something that's needed. So I was in touch with one of the local food banks and said, can I come and have a little corner? And I'll just do this once a week for a couple of hours while my daughter naps every Sunday. And they're like, yeah, lovely, great.
Wow.
During lockdown.
So it started off literally every Sunday, started January 21. And because we were just a corner at that point, and I was like, well, we need a name. And Sebby is my late brother. So Jade is very good friends with Sebby.
Yes, my cousin.
Yes. But you were also friends as well.
Yeah,
you
we were
more
friends.
Than just cousins.
Yeah. And we were neighbours.
And neighbours. And we all
Me
lived,
too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We all lived on the same street. And
Can't
was,
leave Sophie out. Yeah.
Thank you.
It was all very neighbours and lovely. And it just felt like a really lovely way to honour his memory. So that's where the Sebby's come from. And I really do believe that we wouldn't be where we are now if we had a different name. I do really feel like the name is part of what makes us special. And I just sometimes feel like there's a little voice in my ear, like helping, like show me what to do. And
that.
I really do feel like that's
and he's with you every
day,
isn't
absolutely.
He?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and people know about him that would never have known about him. And I mean, he was 5 when he passed away. Yeah. So to have this kind of legacy in his name, I think is very special.
I think it's amazing.
So that's how we started. And we just kind of kept getting bigger. and bigger. More families were coming at the food bank. And by this point, we were kind of also giving out formula and nappies. It kind of grown by that point. And the turning point really was when one week we had to turn away 10 families.
Wow.
Because we had no formula to give them.
Wow.
And I formula fed my kids. Mm-hmm. And it's a really horrible feeling, being like, I'm really sorry, I don't know how you're going to feed your baby now.
It's terrible.
And I posted on social media and I was so cross. And I said, you know, it's outrageous in this day and age. And the cost of a box of formula is £10.50. If you can afford it, please consider going to Tesco, buying a box and dropping off, or donating the money.
Yeah.
And 48 hours later, we'd raised £16,000.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, this is something. And what that made me realise...
And where did you post this? On social media?
Oh, just on social media. Wow. And when I looked back, like, I don't know, 6 months later, that post had reached 100,000 people.
Fantastic.
More than any post even since we've ever... Yeah. You know, even when the princess came, like, we've never reached those numbers before. And I think it is because there is something about not being able to feed your child that really hits home with people.
Sure.
And that's what made me realise people want to help. Fundamentally, yeah. People want to help and people want to do good. They just need to be told how.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we've gone with that since, is we wouldn't be where we are without the amazing people that support us. You know, we give out hundreds of Moses baskets and clothing items, and we don't do that on our own. We are not an island.
Yeah.
And we rely on our donors to make that happen. So we are very much, I like to think, a part of the community and an important part of the community.
You are a massive
too.
Part of Huge. The community. I mean, yeah. We've been there. We've volunteered.
Yes.
Couple of times.
I love it.
And it's unbelievable. I mean, yeah. What you have only gone and done, like, you now have your own, what would you call it, warehouse.
Yeah.
You've got loads of people that volunteer, you've got yeah. loads of people that
staff.
Work for you, staff. And it's just incredible, like, how it just, it's all set out, and, you know, people, families come and you walk them around and what yeah. they need, and I just
it
think,
blows me away.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point I was coming every single yeah. week. I felt like I was just part of the team.
Yeah.
Knew
you
what
are,
I was doing.
But like, honestly, our volunteers are, like, we couldn't do what we do without our volunteers. So the families that come in, they're referred to us by professionals. So you mm-hmm. can't kind of walk in off the street and yeah. get help. You have to be referred. And that's how we know that we're kind of reaching the most vulnerable
yeah,
families.
How did you get to that stage of where you have to be referred?
So originally when we were at the food bank, it was like
anyone
could walk in. And the difficulty with that is that you'd have families sometimes that would come back lots of times and take different items.
Okay.
And you were like, I gave you a buggy last week and I'm giving you one this week, and then I know you'll come back next week for another one. And it just got to a point where it was like,
do you need it or do you want
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and I would know that actually I've given you three buggies, but actually there's a family coming next week and they're not going to get a buggy because now you've taken three different ones. So it just felt like the best way to
and
make
it's
sure.
A trust element as well, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't really know what they're doing with the buggies.
Yeah, and exactly. And more than that, I felt a huge responsibility for the donations that people were giving us.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, when their families, when it's their last baby and it's really sentimental, or we've had people who've like had stillbirths and have the most traumatic things, and they give it with such love and
yeah.
care, and it's so much emotion attached, and I feel a responsibility to make sure that that is being passed on correctly. So by being referral only, we make sure it goes to families that need it, and also the families that we don't necessarily see. You know, the social workers know the families, the midwives know the families.
Yeah.
We've got calls from midwives and saying, this mum's just had a baby, I actually can't discharge her from hospital because she has nothing for the baby.
Wow.
So, you know, that's who we're trying to reach, those people that are sometimes forgotten about.
Yeah, of course. I remember as well one time when I came to Sebi's, I can't remember who reached out to me, someone from there, that said that there's one in three families that come to the warehouse to pick up their things that are sen, that have all different types
huge,
of
yeah. huge need. And if you think about how difficult it can feel when you are financially stable and financially comfortable, and then add on the added pressure of having a child with SEND needs, plus you actually don't know how you're going to pay the bills that month.
And they need their equipment. They need...
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I know that you guys have so many. I mean, there's boxes and signs and things that say, like, sensory toys
yeah, and
all different ages.
Yeah, and we try and really take that into account, because for some of these families, like, they've called us like their safety net. Like, there isn't anywhere else to go.
Yeah.
And we try and make sure that we can cater to all of those children, and not like, we'll never just assume that because you've got a six-year-old child, you're getting six-year-old toys. Like, we just don't know. And that's why we always ask the question. Even things like, we've given out weighted blankets before. We give out like noise cancelling headphones.
Yeah.
Just things that if you are on a very low income, you just can't afford
sure.
to do. But it makes such a difference to your child's well-being and therefore your well-being. And that's
yeah.
what we're about. It's not just about making sure the child has what they want. It's making sure that the parent is in the correct mindset to
yeah.
be able to keep fighting and advocating for that child. So that's why we're very passionate about it.
I think it's amazing.
That makes me really sad.
I know. I know.
I think it's amazing that you have a... Do you know what you need in there? We need a little sensory...
That's what we discussed, didn't we?
We talked about that. So when we get a bigger building, whatever that may be, that is part of the plan, is to have like a whole dedicated sensory area. The problem is well, you've seen it, like...
Yeah, you've got no room.
You've got no room. No. And, you know, before this, we were in a tiny room in a dance school, which was great, but we grew out of that pretty quick. And we've already really outgrown where we are.
Yeah.
But the problem is that rent is a lot of money.
Yeah.
And... you know, every time I have to pay the rent every month, I do it so begrudgingly, but we need the space
sure.
and we have to pay money for it. But so I just don't know when that will be, but that is very much on the agenda because we are seeing now so many more families with kids with
and they're coming to the warehouse because they obviously need to be with their family and it's a completely foreign location for them and that can set them off already. And then the mum and dad or the mum is trying to gather all their stuff. Tell us more about, because I know when we volunteer there, we used to set up like packs. So we used to get a piece of paper and on there would say mum and three children, their ages, what they're into, their size, clothes and everything. We used to make a big pack of all
things. And you get that from the referral. They give you all that information.
Yeah, exactly. So the referral partner. And I mean, you know, these referral partners are incredible. Some of them, especially the social workers, have huge, huge caseloads.
Yeah.
And yet they still manage to know those families and know what they need. And I just have so much respect for them. So yeah, they'll send us a referral and say, you know, they've got, so let's say it was my family, they've just like a husband and a wife and they've got a, you know, an 8-year-old boy and a 6-year-old girl. These are the clothes sizes they need. The boy's really interested in Pokemon and the girl's really into Barbie, and then we would try and pack accordingly. What happens more often than not is, I'd say at least 50% now, if not more, you know, they have some kind of autism, ADHD, and they want fidget toys, they want sensory toys, or they've got a specific interest.
Yeah.
Especially the kids.
Cars.
Yeah, like...
Figurines.
Yeah. Can you help with that? Yeah. And so another thing that we do is we have our birthday club, which is where if there is a child that isn't going to get a gift, we will make sure that
you're going to start crying again at this.
We make sure they have a gift to open. We make sure they have a cake. We make sure they have balloons. We make sure that that child gets celebrated
on
their birthday.
What about cake?
Yeah, cake. Of course they get a cake.
Well, this
a
is horrific. I'm so due on my period. I can't cope.
Honestly, when you came with
me, I was a mess.
She was an absolute mess.
But I love the birthday club. It's one of the favourite things that we do. And so one of the packages on that is like a special... Like, so we give them different options. Like, are they into Batman? Are they into Barbie? Is it the sensory package? And more often than not, that's what gets asked for. So we buy brand new. Obviously, everything birthday club is brand new. And they'll get these, like, gorgeous, like, new fidget toys. Or often we do a lot of, like, you know, the lava lamps with all the lights and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just lovely to be able to, for that child, to get something that is perfect for them for their birthday.
And how do you usually get all your sensory gifts? Because I know obviously there's like Amazon wish lists and people donate secondhand toys and things, but when there's such a huge Sen world and there's specific needs and interests, how do you go about getting all these things for them?
So it's for birthday club. What we'll often do if it's a child like that who has very specific needs, we will do an Amazon wish list and we'll tell you know, our supporters enough about the family for them to feel connected. We'll always change the name because it's part of protecting our family's identity. So we will come up with a name and we will put on our wish list things like, you know, the sensory lights and, you know, whatever it is that they're, or if they've got a special interest. One, we had a little boy recently who was absolutely obsessed with countries. So we got him like a globe and we got him a puzzle with a map of the world and like that was like living his best life. That
Awesome.
So happy.
Do you get to see, do they open their presents in front of
it
you?
It depends.
Okay.
So when it depends whether the family pick it up or the referral partner pick it
right.
up. But when I mean, you have to be there when some of the families come pick it up. Because
I couldn't.
Honestly.
I could need
to
see it.
A blubbering mess.
Yeah, it is. And the parents often are just so
grateful.
They cry
because
it's just giving them the opportunity to do like,
and you want to give everything to your child,
exactly.
right?
And I think that is what is a lot of not spoken about when we think about families that are living in these desperate circumstances. You know, we have families that are, you know, regular two-parent families, both parents working, but still can't make ends meet. The boiler just broke and that's just sent them over the edge.
Yeah.
Or we've got women who are escaping domestic violence, men who are escaping domestic violence. That's not spoken about enough. Or, you know, women that are fleeing trafficking and slavery and all these awful situations.
And it's happening way more than we know, right?
Way more than we know. And in places that we know, like, you know, I live in Bournemouth. I can't even tell you how many families we get referred from Bournemouth. Are literally almost my neighbours.
On your doorstep.
On our doorstep.
Well, they say now there was an article recently. I think it's one in three roads. There's trafficking that takes place.
Yeah,
like it's crazy.
It is crazy.
Yeah.
And it's just everywhere. And I think what is so hard for these families is that all you want to do is provide for your child. and the guilt and the shame that comes with that, that's what we're trying to eradicate. So at Christmas, when we have our Christmas grotto, the families come in and they choose. So we have different sections all laid out like a shop, and they can choose. They have that autonomy. They get points. They get 10 points for every child that they have. And all the toys have got a points number on them, and they shop with their points as if they were in a shop.
That is gorgeous. That is
so lovely. And that gives them back that autonomy. And we have a massive... At Christmas, the sensory section is always the most popular. We cannot keep it stocked. We can't keep it stocked.
No, I can imagine. Do you not have any send charities or anything like that that donate things?
So we have some amazing corporate supporters who give toys, but I have to admit, it's very rarely sensory stuff. It's very mainstream. It's your Barbies, your whatever else, your Marvels.
Yeah, there are so many kids that need the sensory these days, way more than I think people are even aware of.
Yeah, well, I mean,
there's my brain going a million miles an hour. How can we get some sensory toys to every corner?
I mean, we'd love that. Just because otherwise you feel like you're not meeting that need. You know, I don't want a family to come and be like, well, nothing here is appropriate. So yeah, answers on a postcard.
Yeah, I can imagine. So forget the sense side.
Yes.
I know, obviously, that's what we always talk about all day long. If you are there times, and I've seen that there's times, and it must be really, really stressful, where you cannot meet the family's needs if they're desperate for a buggy and you've run out of buggies and things like that.
And that's what it usually is. It's usually buggies. So buggies, the things that we've had often, if these come in, they'll go out the same day. So double buggies will always pretty much go out the same day. They are like gold dust buggies, especially double buggies.
So have you got people on like a wait list? I find them the worst.
Have you got people on like a wait list?
So no, it doesn't work like that. So basically you are referred, you book your appointment to come pick stuff up. And if one comes in on the day that you are picking up, so what will happen is, let's say Sophie's been in the week before and packed it for you. She'll make a note, missing the buggy, we don't have any buggies. When the family comes, we'll look at the list and be like, okay, everything's packed for you, go through it with them. Oh, we didn't have a buggy. Oh, let me just go check, see if one's come in since then. Okay. And often I've had someone at the door donating a buggy and been like, not meant to be. I'm literally like handing it back out again.
Okay.
Same with bouncers, playmats, all these things.
So if you don't have any of those and the family are there,
that's when you do your Amazon.
Will you still get it to them, or you have to say, I'm really sorry, you're here, there's no buggy?
We don't have. And that's why we really want to encourage people to donate. It's like with our website, it's just so easy. Like, you book a slot, usually like the next day or the day after, and just come and bring it. And I promise it goes to really lot. Like, it goes really where it's needed.
We see that,
And look, I appreciate times are harder for everyone. People sometimes need to sell their buggies or they give them to family members. So it's not always possible. But if you are looking for somewhere, we're always so happy to take it.
Yeah.
And if you think for some of these families as well, especially a buggy, like, that can be a lifeline for a mum that is stuck at home with three children that, you know, lives on the 10th floor of a flat that has no way of getting out otherwise. Yeah. It literally is a lifeline for her. They can go to the park. You know, we had a story a few months ago where a school called us and were like, we've got two children, siblings. Mum's just had a new baby and the children haven't been at school all week because the mum has no way of getting the three of them to school with the baby. So we put a sling in a taxi to mum and the kids start and go to school the next day. Oh. So you don't realise little things like that. They literally are life-changing for families.
That is just unbelievable.
You're going to have to take over. I can't.
It's amazing.
You know, so, I'm going through my house this afternoon in my garage.
I already saw, without even looking at you, from my side eye, the brain's going mad. What can I give? And that's what I do every time I come and volunteer. I message my school group because there's like 60 people on there. And I'm like, right, I'm going to Sevy's Corner tomorrow. This is what they need. Because on your website, you always have a list of what you're missing. Even things like age 2 to 3 t-shirts for boys. Yeah. Well, everyone needs to wear clothes. They can't wear jumpers in the summer.
Exactly. And that's also really hard when you have like often with the older boys. So we go up to age 10. We don't go past that. Like, we haven't got the space. But it used to be that always sort of 8 to 9, 9 to 10, we would never have stuff for. And it's really horrible when you've got a family with three kids coming in. You've got three boys and you're giving the two youngest and you can't give the old because you just haven't got the stuff. And we are always inundated with baby stuff because, you know, like, they wear it for all of 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's immaculate. You get so much of it. But you get to sort of the 4, 5, 6 plus and they wear it, you know.
Because you can wear it year after year, can't you? Because they don't grow like babies do.
It just gets the holes in the knees or stained or whatever.
Then it goes in the bin. Because I know you're really mindful, which I love as well. You won't give things that are stained or that have holes in. That will have to go.
Very high standards.
Yes.
But so it should be. Where are you lacking the most, age-wise?
7 to 10. Okay. 7 to 10 girls and boys, really.
Are we on that mission?
Yeah. I have a 9-year-old girl.
Perfect.
There you go.
It's just because we are strict, and the reason for that is because we try and think about it from the family's perspective.
Of course.
Like, has to feel dignified.
Yeah.
You know, my husband, my husband loves shopping in charity shops. He loves it. It's his favourite thing to do. But there is a sometimes certain smell when you go into a charity shop.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm really against at Sebby's. We don't want it to feel like charity. We want it to feel empowering and dignified.
Yeah, and that they're shopping.
And that they're shopping and that the stuff feels nice. And you know what? If I wouldn't put my kid in it, then why should you have to put your kid in it? Because you've got no other choice.
Sure.
Yeah. So we are quite strict about that. And I stand by that.
I love that. So going back to you being neurodiverse.
Yes.
And having this amazing charity. Yes. And when things don't go your way. Yes. And when there's things not there because there's no donations. How are you?
So so I have the most incredible team. I really, really do. There's seven of us now. And since this whole thing with my neurodiversity has come out, like, I think we all work together much better now. And the girls know that sometimes I will go off and they have to rein me back in. And they are really good at doing that. But equally, they know that I will have ideas that no one else will come up with because my brain just works that way. Mm-hmm. So Katie, who's our donations manager, will have an idea and she'll say, I want you to think about it because I know that you'll turn it from this into this.
Yeah.
And that is
you're like ChatGPT.
Yes, that's exactly what my brain can do.
Yeah,
and
I'm
trying to see it as a good thing and as a superpower. Like recently we have, this is really boring, but we've moved databases and I built us a database from scratch because that was my latest hyperfocus.
That's amazing. I love that.
And I just, my brain works that way and I did it and I enjoyed it and I didn't, you know, didn't speak to Gary for about 10 days because it was what I was doing 24/7. But now look what happened.
That's amazing. So prior to you, it's almost like coming out as ADHD to the team. Was there a different atmosphere then? Because they couldn't fully understand who you are.
And I know they knew before you knew.
I have to tell you, she's going to kill me for saying this, but when I told the girls, Jocelyn said to me, she's going to kill me saying, she was like, and did they find anything else?
Brilliant. What else have you got, Bianca?
ACD? I think it was just that. And we'll never let her forget it. I think they always knew. And I think that now we are open about it and can talk about it. It's very helpful in how we all work.
Well, I think it's closure for all of you because it's the unknown of like certain behaviours and hyperfocuses it makes sense.
And they know that I'll probably, you know, some nights I'll be working till 3 a.m. because I'll be mid-hyperfocus, but that doesn't mean that they need to be working till 3 a.m.
Sure.
They just know that sometimes they can't get me because I'm in the middle of doing things and I have to work to my own schedule, which I think I have always battled with in my career and having to have like a 9-to-5 and not knowing why that always felt so hard.
Yeah.
And now I get it. If I'm not interested in something, it's really hard to do it.
Yeah.
And that is difficult when you're CEO and you have responsibilities. But now I know that I will be interested at some point. I just can't keep working against my brain and I have to work
go with it.
Exactly. And that I think has been quite game changing.
Yeah.
Right. When I told a couple of my good friends about it, one of whom is very experienced in this field, she was like, oh wow, you didn't know. Oh, okay.
How did you not know?
Yeah.
Why did you not tell
me? Yes, exactly. Like, welcome to the party. But I definitely think in all senses it has really helped, and it's also stopped me beating myself up so much. I think I was always really hard on myself, like, why is this so hard for me and so easy for everyone else? And I think once you realise that there's a reason, and our brains are just programmed a bit differently, and that's okay. And I'm really proud of the fact that where Sebby's is now, like, I got an MBE, you know, we had this amazing visit with, you know, Princess Catherine. Like, for someone who really was just trying to get rid of her children's clothes, I feel like I've achieved a lot. And that is because of the ADHD, not in spite of it.
Yeah.
So I kind of want... I'm really open about that because I want it to, you know, I know lots
inspire other people.
Yeah, I have lots of friends with girls who have ADHD, and it was just never a thing when we were younger. Like, no one would ever have looked at me and been like, wow, she's got ADHD.
Yeah.
And the signs were raging and absolutely there, but we just didn't, it wasn't a thing then. And I just want those friends of mine and those girls to know, actually, look, you can be successful. You can be
absolutely
super successful.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to hold you back. You just have to work with it.
Exactly. That's amazing.
And not fight
it's
it.
Where you it's where it's where you are today with it. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
So what's the future for Sebby's Corner? Do you have a future
plan?
Are we a day by day?
No, we do. So I think our model is very much, we don't want to pick up Sebby's and drop it and duplicate it anywhere else, which is what we could do. Like, there are other baby banks that do that, some amazing ones that have different hubs. That's not right for us, but just because I think it's taken us so long to get where we are, and we know what we're doing, and I would worry that we would lose something by having different hubs. So the plan instead is to work on supporting families deeper and better. So we
just
do,
expanding what you have.
Exactly. So we have the essential support. We now have a new service that is just for new parents where they come in and they choose what they want. And it's a bit like a John Lewis, but for families that can't afford to actually go to John Lewis. And we have school uniform, and we've just started a whole real new area of the charity called service partnerships. So for example, we have an amazing forest school who will give like forest school days out to families. We have an amazing speech and language therapist who's doing like free like group speech and language like amazing information sessions. And we want to work more on the like SEND stuff as well, and have like, you know, parent information sessions for people like that, so that people feel a bit like they're less alone.
Well, yeah, because I mean, if you leave it all to, you know, NHS and speech and language and occupational therapy, you could be waiting years. And if you can't afford it privately, what do you do?
Exactly. And there's also a language barrier often. So a lot of the families that we support aren't British. They're asylum seekers, they're refugees, or English just isn't their first language. And so much of that navigation involves form filling and speaking to people. And when English isn't your first language, you're already at disadvantage.
Yeah, that's so true.
By being, we are already known to them. We are a safe place. You know, we use Language Line, we use translation services. We try and meet them where they're at. So that's why we feel like we're in a good position to be able to do that.
That's amazing.
So one of the things, so like, we can't help everyone.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, there's that story of that man on the beach, and there's all those sea turtles that washed up on the beach, and he's like picking them up and he's throwing them back in, and someone comes along and says, you know, there's a whole beach of sea turtles, what are you doing? You're never going to reach them all. And he picks up another one, throws it in, and he says, no, but I made a difference to that one. And that's what we're trying to do, is we can't help everybody. We just can't. But we can make a real difference to the families that we can help. So that's what we're trying to focus on, is helping those families better and
I love that so much.
Did you ever have like a family that you've seen them grow up?
Yeah. I mean,
that must be amazing to see a baby from like, you've helped them from a newborn, maybe up to the age of 2 or 3. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, and also what's lovely about that is we are a safety net. So we don't want families to rely on us, but we want to support them. So we've had families who have come to us after and said, because of you and because of the relief you gave me and the mental load, I got a job.
Wow.
You know, and things like that. And that's what you want to see, is you want to see families kind of pulling themselves out of this situation. Because how can you think about paying off debt or leaving an abusive relationship or whatever it is when you don't know where your baby's next bottle of milk is coming from? Yeah. You don't know how you're going to change your baby's nappy that afternoon. Yeah. We had to once literally put nappies in a taxi to a mum because she's like, I have no nappies and I don't know what I'm going to do. And she was completely hysterical. Obviously, that doesn't happen very often. But like, it was an emergency. And what do you do in those situations? So,
do you think that's why a lot of people stay with their partners because of that?
Yeah, it's just another thing, isn't it? It's the mental load. And, you know, a lot of these abusive relationships is about like financial abuse.
Yeah.
And so they control everything. And so when you don't have those access to those funds and you don't know how you're going to buy that next box of formula.
You physically can't get out.
So we're trying to, you know, we work with all the refugees that are local, and they're incredible. They do amazing, amazing things. And they'll refer families to us, but they'll say, you know, we had a woman, her child arrived in the middle of the night with just their slippers.
Oh my gosh. Then
we will, you know, get a whole package of them. And, you know, we just don't, I think sometimes we forget how lucky we are and how privileged we are.
I think we do, because you don't see this on a daily basis.
You don't.
I don't think we see it enough. I know you're doing everything you can, and it's unbelievable. And obviously it's all word of mouth. I mean, you've had the princess, you've had people there. But I think as just an outsider and someone that is privileged to not have to go to a food bank or can go to Tesco's and buy the kids clothes and things, I still don't think we see it enough.
No, because I can get upset that I can't buy my child, I don't know, something that costs £100 or whatever it is. And then it's like, take it back to basics, Jade. Or you know what, be grateful for what you've got.
And
because
I think the living conditions often of these families are like, you know, at Christmas we had a family that I can't even tell you. It was like mold and like mice, and it's just horrendous. And like,
I complain of a spider or a leaf.
Yeah,
or that our room's too small.
Okay, so maybe I'm not going to ICOS and woe is me. But like, you know what? I've never had to choose between turning on the heating and, you know, buying period products. Yeah. And those really are like the everyday decisions that a lot of these families are having to make. Well, mine needs to pay for the bus pass so my kid can get to school, but she also needs period knickers. So what do I do? How do I choose between those things? So that's what we're trying to help.
That's amazing.
Going back to your ADHD quickly, have you ever thought of getting a formal diagnosis, maybe medication? Is that ever something that's
so I would love a diagnosis. And I think not for any real reason other than I just think possibly part of me still needs that validation.
She doesn't say validation.
But to be honest, the waiting lists are so long. Yeah. And I just think of how much that would cost. And
It would cost a hell of a lot if you want to go private.
What I could do with that money, like, you know, we're big Disney family. I could, you know what I mean? The number of meals with Mickey I could use that for.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really hard to justify spending that on yourself. Because.
But also, what do you need a formal diagnosis for? You know you have it. It's made you understand who you are and how things work, unless you really want to be medicated.
Yeah, that is the only thing
what
I would
do you
say,
actually
yeah.
need?
The thing that I do find frustrating, though, is often I'll say to people, oh, you know, I have ADHD, and they go, oh, doesn't everyone have that these days?
Oh, fuck
and
off.
I literally just want to punch them in the face. I'm like, no, everyone doesn't
Isn't
have that.
Isn't everyone a little bit autistic?
Yeah. Mm. And it's just rubbish. And I've actually started saying to people, actually, there are more diagnoses of women, and that's because society has failed them.
And because we have masked it for so long.
Really, I'm still very good at masking it, and I can mask like a pro.
I mean, you just told us how anxious you were before this. You don't show any sort of anxiety. See, are you masking well? I think you're relaxed now.
I feel much better now.
Because her cousin's here.
You grow up masking, and you don't know any different. And I think that's what makes me so cross. It's not, everyone is not a bit autistic. No, we don't all have ADHD. Yeah. We have struggled our whole lives dealing with it. Don't take that away from us. You know? So that would be the only thing, is to be like, wave that bit of piece of paper in their face and be like, look, I do have, I told you I had
it. Sure, so it's literally to like,
shut people up.
Yeah.
And I don't think I would medicate because, yes, I do struggle with it. Like, I mean, the girls, I mean, honestly, thank God that my husband is as like,
is he typical?
So neurotypical, because my children would not have their homework done. Like, we, you know, the amount of things that he does to make sure that our home life runs, because my brain does not work like that.
You're so like my husband, and he won't mind me saying it. He's also undiagnosed ADHD, and my God, he will not. He can have Bill sitting there for 2 weeks because it doesn't interest him. He's not going
to
do it.
I'm exactly. Okay, I'm like,
so
have
I
you
have
that?
To do it.
I'm like, oh no, I'll do it. Or like, I used to do the washing at home, but then it would go in the washing machine
and it wouldn't come out.
And stay there.
Oh, I forgot to do that. Oh, I better wash it again. It's been in there 2 days. Yeah. And literally, it would be like the kids had no clothes for school because the washing had been in the washing machine 3 times because I still hadn't got out to taking it out.
So is that
out.
Your husband's job now?
So that's his job, and he's brilliant at it, and his brain just works
and
like
he
that.
Accepts
and
he's okay.
He knows that, and I think it's made our relationship better because...
You both know where you stand.
Yeah, and he knows I'm not lazy. It's not I'm lazy. I just don't see it. My
but
brain
also,
doesn't
you're
think
also
it.
That, but you're so hyper-focused on your other baby, which is Sebby's corner. And when
you're
hyper-focused
on something that you enjoy.
Yes exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Like, holidays? Oh, he doesn't know how to drive. I have holidays so covered. Holidays are my hyper focus.
I can imagine it is scheduled
to the
minute.
Next time you want to go to Disney, Florida, I am your woman.
Perfect. Give me a few years. I can't do more than 2 hours on the plane at the moment, but yeah.
So like I can only do things like that with things that interest me, but luckily I have the backup. If I didn't have that backup, it would look very different. And the same at work. Like, the girls are amazing, and they know that what comes with the sometimes genius, sometimes a bit nuttiness, is that sometimes things get slipped, or I'll like ask them to do something and they'll be like, you asked me to do that last week and I've already done it, or I'll ask them to do something and like they're like, but you said you were gonna, you know, and they work with it and they know it, and I think they are much more understanding because
but
of that.
Also, when you're a CEO of a business, you employ people to do certain things, right? So if you know that that's always a weakness, you know it's just something physically that you just can't do, you've got actually someone to do that for
you. Are
you
good at delegating?
No.
You have to do
what,
it
you
yourself?
Want to do it all yourself?
Yeah. It's
but
her
then
baby.
I don't have the capacity to do it myself, or it doesn't interest me, so I'll just sit on my to-do list until...
But you still won't give it to anyone else.
And then we'll be like, I'm just going to take this off your list now. And I'll be like, okay, thank you. And then it's like a relief when it is, but I can't...
But you would never offer it.
Yeah. And it is hard. It is hard. And I think that is sometimes not spoken about enough, that yes, it's great. And, you know, I can problem solve. Like, give me a problem, I can fix it. We moved the desk around in the office. Honestly, the girls were talking the whole day about how the desks aren't going to fit and we're not going to do this. And I was like, you all need to leave and I'm going to do it and it's going to be fine. And it was, because that is how my brain works. And I can see the solutions to those problems. You know, give me an idea and I can make it better and I can make it work and I can solve the problems. But, you know, give me some of the compliance stuff that I have to do that doesn't interest me. Well, that's been on my to-do list now.
Yeah.
You know, for probably longer than
your mind,
because it just doesn't interest me, so my brain can't engage with it.
Yeah. Does your mind ever switch off?
No.
Do you sleep well?
No. Terribly.
I mean, she's working till 3 a.m. and then you're getting up and doing the school run. I would be shaking in a corner.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, I do.
Like, literally, I got up at 5:30 this morning and I want to rock.
Oh no, my daughter didn't get up this morning until 6:30, but I was up.
I thought of you
five.
At 5:30, and I was like, I wonder if you're awake
five.
Yet.
I think is that not quite a tip, like neurodiverse thing is that bad
yeah,
sleep?
Yeah,
it's just horrific.
Brain doesn't ever
sure.
Off.
Yeah.
And look, what happens is that then which I had last week, I get really close to burnout.
Yeah.
And then I said to the girls, I'm really sorry, I'm actually having a mental health day. I'm not coming in. And I didn't turn on my computer. I went shopping, I went for coffee.
Good for you.
And
that's
I'm
important.
Much better now at being like, this is what I need for me. Because when your brain is switched on all the time, it's exhausting.
You're
going
to burn out. You need to reset. It's so important.
And that's
important.
What you said on your Sorry. Latest post about I going did. Away for a day, for
I
a
did.
Night.
It's like your body needs to reset yeah. so you can be a better parent
exactly.
or a better person in yourself.
And I've been there. You know, I was in the Priory, 13 years ago with a complete, terrible anxiety, complete burnout. And I never want to get to that place again. Yeah. And now I know that I have to prioritise my mental
self-care.
Health. Self-care is real. And self-care is not just having a bath
no,
by yourself
not.
Or going to Tesco by yourself, which
yeah.
is what I
but
think
good
a lot
for
of us
you,
think it is.
You probably found that really difficult yeah. from what you're saying to yeah. even say to the girls, yeah. girls, I'm having a day yes. off. Like, that's not an easy no. thing to say.
Or to
almost,
admit.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. I was going to say it's to
But now I really want to do that because I want to model for them that if they want to turn around and say that's okay.
And it makes you a better person yes. the next day.
Exactly.
I like that you've got that model idea, though, for them to say the same if they
yeah,
need to.
Yeah, and like, we, you know, we all work
as long as they don't
really
take the piss
hard.
Out.
No, and that's the thing, is none of them would. Like, my team are incredible. They work so, so hard. Yeah. But mental health is just as important as physical health. Like, if one of them broke a leg, I would not be like, well, I expect you at your desk.
And you need to sort out all the school uniform.
Yeah, and you need to go pack all the school uniform at the same time. Like, why can't we give the same compassion to mental health as we do to physical health? So I'm really open about it with them. Look, I'm having a really bad day. I feel shit. Like,
they're family, aren't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, like, I'm not coming in. And the same way that I know that they'll say to me, look, things are really hard. And I'll say, okay, cool, don't come in. Have a day. Just take a day. And I think that is what makes us better colleagues, staff, and just better
sure.
humans.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So
I'm on the verge of a meltdown.
You are?
Oh, massively.
Are you?
I'm burnt out to fuck.
Do you want to spend the rest of the day at the home today and not be with me?
No,
I'm joking. We're not being together anyway.
But what are you going to do about that, Jake?
Yeah, what are you
going to
do?
I can't do anything at the moment about it. It just is what it is. I don't know. What does one do?
You can't get off the hamster wheel.
No, do you know what I do about it? I voice it about it.
Okay, and that's the
yeah, but
that's really
important. That's your way now, yeah. and it helps you so much.
Yeah.
So you're doing really, really well. Well, it's about everyone.
It's always about me.
So in regards to the warehouse, obviously you're saying already, like, it's so tight already because there's more and more staff and stuff and everything like that. Is your plan to get somewhere bigger? Is that even, like...
Bigger rent.
Bigger...
More anxiety. I know.
Bigger space means bigger rent. In an ideal world, yes. But...
No plan.
Funding is really hard at the moment across all the whole charity sector. You know, I'm in lots of Facebook groups of other CEOs and fundraising, and everyone is really feeling it. And I know it's not just us, and I wouldn't want to stretch ourselves anymore. Like, for me, the families always come first. And if it means that we can't, instead of supporting the 120, you know, we keep sticking at 120 families a month instead of going up to 150, but we stay sustainable, then that's what we'll have to do. Look, if someone the thing that I find frustrating is, even you look in Boreham Wood, right? Argos has closed down.
Yeah.
That's an entire empty unit. What's it doing sitting there empty?
Yeah.
Like, I could do some really good stuff with that unit.
You really could.
And that's what I find frustrating. There are so many empty units, but just trying to get into them is
that's what I feel
impossible.
About houses.
And
you know, when you're looking for a house and you're sitting there and they won't take less rent, we'll get nothing.
It's pointless.
Yeah.
It's pointless.
Yeah, I
agree. And that's what look, to get an empty like that would be amazing.
Yeah. That would be unbelievable.
It'd be amazing. This might sound like a personal question to ask and maybe a bit of an uneducated question.
I know what you're going to ask.
Go on. What am I going to ask?
You're going to ask how they make money.
How, when you said that charities financially struggle, what does that mean? How do you pay yourself?
Okay.
How do you pay yourself? How
no,
do you go to
exactly
Disney?
It's a great question. First of all, just to clarify, Sandy Corner does not pay for me to go to Disney. Just to clarify that. No. So what happens is, we have a payroll of 7. So I have 7 staff members who all get paid. On top of that, we have about 500 volunteers. Amazing people like you guys who volunteer their time. We don't pay them.
Mm-hmm.
We have to pay things. We have to pay for things like nappies and formula. We have to pay service charge. We have to pay rent. All those things cost money.
How do you pay that if you're a charity?
It costs us... If you include the value of the stock we give out, we have to bring in £800,000 a year. £400,000 of that is stuff, like the value of the stuff.
Yeah.
And the other 400 is like literal dollar,
money.
The way we do that is we get a lot of money, we get some money from trust. So I will put an application to the National Lottery, for example, and say, this is what we do, and we'd like £20,000. And then they will either say, yes, here's £20,000, or they say, sorry, there's too many charities, we're not giving you. So that's one big area. We also have our corporate stream, which is where corporate, have you been there when we have corporates in?
No.
So,
but I've seen it on your social media.
Yeah, so like corporate teams have CSR teams, corporate social responsibility, and they'll come and volunteer. And part of that is they donate at the same time. And that's great income for us as well.
So do you have to find this every year?
Yes.
So they don't carry it on the year after?
I don't sleep. No, no.
So 1 year you might not get it and then you can't pay your staff?
We have reserves. So we have 6 months of reserves in the bank.
Yeah.
And that is just in case we don't.
So you are literally relying on people.
Constantly. And then we have our major donors. So that's people that are like maybe more wealthy than others and are happy to give, you know, maybe £1,000, £3,000 as a one off. And then everything else comes from the community. That's like people like you, people like, you know, generally, whether that's like, you know, someone will run the London Marathon and do it for us, or people will do bake sales, or we've got a big school uniform appeal coming up where we're trying to fundraise to buy all the stuff for school uniform. We've got 200 children who, without us, won't be able to get uniform for September. So we're doing a fundraising appeal for that, and that will go to all of our donors, and we're hoping to raise £7,000, £11,000 really from that. So it all comes from literally local people.
Do you know what really like frustrates me? I was talking about it with my friends. It's a slightly off topic, but it's not. I'm so worried that next year Callie won't have a 1-to-1 because financially, it's not there.
Yeah.
And I just said, for example, like you've got thousands and thousands of followers on Instagram. We all do. If everyone just put in a pound, that would literally pay for 2 years of Callie having a 1-to-1. 2 years. So like, why can't everyone just, what's a
I
pound?
Know. We often say that.
It must be so frustrating.
We did a big matched giving charity extra appeal last year. We raised, with the match money, £180,000, which was amazing.
Wow.
But it was literally like, if every one of our followers gave us a tenner, like we would have smashed our, and I appreciate it's not that simple. Like not everyone is in the position to do so. Not everyone can, not everyone wants to. But yeah, the thing that's frustrating is like, getting people to know why it's important. And I often get pushback, like people are like, well, why are you paying staff when you can get volunteers to do it? Or why are you paying rent? Like, I don't want to give you money for rent. I'll give you £10, but you have to spend it on formula. I don't want you to spend it on rent. And it's like, well, that's all very well and good, but
where
if
you
I don't
store
have a
everything?
Building, where's that formula living? In
and also, how can you expect people to work for free every day?
You
yes, we can all volunteer when we've got 2 hours a week.
But if I've got families coming in all
day. That's uneducated people.
Yeah, and if I've got families coming in all day and I'm relying on volunteers, well, if your kid's sick and you don't come, I've got 10 families it's not realistic.
No.
So that's sometimes the frustration is showing people we take your money so seriously.
Yeah.
Like we really do, and we are so like sensible with how we spend it, but we rely completely on donations. We don't get any government funding.
Wow.
Why?
Because the money's just not there at the moment. It's just not
But have you ever had that?
We got a little bit a couple of years ago, but not very much. Like we rely on the
massively,
general public.
Yeah.
And we are very lucky. Look, it's been 5 years. We're still going strong, you know, but it's a constant worry. I don't, you know, sometimes I don't sleep.
Yeah,
I
understand that.
Where that money's
I think
gonna come from.
Just from a complete outsider, there has been so many times on like where, hi there, I'm running for X. The week after, hi, would you donate a bit of money?
Yeah.
I'm doing this. So I must honestly probably spend about, I probably put in a tenner or £20
pounds,
like, but you're spending, I'm probably doing it like 3 or 4 times a month where people are asking, I can never say no.
Yeah.
Even if I can give whatever I can give. But I think what's difficult is that it's always constantly people asking because everywhere needs
it's
funding.
Such a saturated market and all the charities are in desperate need. So everybody is asking at the same time. You know, so it is a problem. And that's why we're just trying to like think of things we can do that are a bit different. Like we've got this psychic, this medium night coming up in September. You know,
we're coming.
But you're coming.
Tell us about it.
So we have this amazing medium called Sandra Mitchell.
Ah, I've seen Sandra.
She's fantastic.
She's
fabulous. So we're taking over the village and she's going to do like platform readings. So she'll be on the stage and she'll be like passing on messages. We've got a raffle. We've got a bar.
So that's really nice.
And it's really nice.
You're doing something that's fun and they don't feel like it's
something out of it.
Yeah.
It's
going
to be a great night. We've got Cowshed, our sponsor. They're
incredible. I know. Every time I go to the warehouse, I'm like, oh my God, I want all this Cowshed and Medicaid stuff.
Every ticket, you get a Cowshed goodie bag. Like, hello. You know,
lovely.
Tickets are still £30 for another couple of weeks. So, like, the cost of the ticket is less than the value of stuff you're going to get. It's a no brainer.
Yeah.
And we're trying to be set clever with things like that. You know, you're giving us money, but you're getting something.
And that's what we did with our event as well. Like, it costs. It cost £35 a ticket, but there was food and drink unlimited. There was goodie bags, and you're here for a really great night. And that's how you have to think about it. Not I'm giving £35 just to charity for nothing, even though it kind of should be like that.
But I get look, times are hard for everybody, and that's why we take it really seriously when people do give us their money, and we really try and show. I think we've always been quite good at showing where that money goes. So if you go on the Amazon wish list and buy a gift, like you'll see it arrive in the hub, you'll see it go out to the family. Like we try and be really transparent.
And you tag people a lot, and you thank people. I think you're genuinely grateful. Of course you are. Like, it's not, oh, here's another donation.
Yeah, no, we really don't take.
I mean, every
answers.
Time we come in and a buggy arrives, like you, Emma, will be like, oh my God, there's a buggy. Like, you still get such a buzz 5 years on, because you know it's going to go to a good home.
And it
really
just shows,
it's so genuine. Like, you're such a genuine company.
Sorry, I just don't feel like I do enough.
Well, get home and go through your double garage.
I mean, you are wonderful. Yeah. I mean,
it's been really.
I have no purpose.
And honestly, like,
volunteers.
You guys, honestly, like, it really does make a difference.
We'll
and even if someone has, even if you have, like, you know, a couple of hours once a month, like, that still makes a difference.
Exactly.
There's no commitment. It's just calm.
I know, then I feel guilty that I haven't been for a few months, but also, like.
I mean, I feel guilty if I don't see my grandma.
You should. We love
your
grandma.
I should.
She's
96 years old.
She's doing amazing.
I know. That is amazing.
But yeah, like, we love having you. And like, even things like this, like, it's a great opportunity to, like, tell people about
And this is what I want you to say as well. How do people donate?
Go to the website.
What's the website?
So if you go to donate.sebbyscorner.co.uk, you can make a donation. Or if you just want to go to the regular website and donate your things or volunteer, just sebbyscorner.co.uk.
So I have a question. If you are not local, but you've got loads of baby bits.
So the best thing to do is, we are part of something called the Baby Bank Alliance, which is an amazing organisation. It's a bit like the Trussell Trust. The Trussell Trust to food banks is what the Baby Bank Alliance is to us.
Yeah.
And it's a link between all of the baby banks in the UK. And we all work really collaboratively together. So what you can do is, you can go to the website, and you can see where your closest baby bank
is. That's brilliant.
And wherever it is, they will be so grateful for all of those things. Just check what they're taking, because we all take different things.
I was going to say, will you take everything?
So no, you have to check the website. And we really encourage people to do that, because we've had some really weird and wonderful donations. I think a couple of weeks ago, we got a chainsaw sharpener or something, and have to be honest, we've never had a chainsaw in need of sharpening. And the thing that people don't realize is that costs us money to get rid of.
Yeah, of course.
So we really do ask people to make sure it's in good condition, and that it's stuff that we need, because you've seen the hub, like, it's overflowing at the seams. So to have stuff that we can't give out is just not utilizing the space. But yeah, if you go to the website or the Baby Bank Alliance, if you're not local, like, giving these items really do give other people, like, a second chance. So
it's wonderful.
If you can, pass them on.
You're amazing.
Well,
thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing, and we love you, Sebby.